Sophia Institute Press presents Learning the Virtues That Lead You to God by Romano Guardini. Read by Chris Larson. Editor's note: the biblical references in the following pages are based on the Douay-Rheims version of the Old and New Testaments. Where applicable, quotations have been cross-referenced with the differing names and enumeration in the Revised Standard Version, using the acronym RSV. Preface. In Plato's Republic, there is a passage in which Socrates demonstrates how the supreme truth is united in the good with the divine itself. In reply, his young interlocutor, Glaucon, cries out in amazement, "You speak of an inconceivably transcendent beauty." In regard to the manner in which the great master of philosophic thought makes the state the protector of the moral order, one may well differ with him. We have learned by bitter experience what happens when government officials take into their hands what belongs to personal freedom. There is one thing, however, that Plato's philosophy has made clear once and for all. That is, after the confusion and chaos introduced into thought by the sophists, he showed that absolute values exist, that these can be known, and that therefore there is such a thing as truth. He likewise showed that these values are summed up in the majesty of that which we call the good, and that this good can be realized in the life of man according to the potentialities of each individual. Plato showed that the good is identical with the divine, but that its realization leads man to true humanity, as virtue comes into being, and this virtue signifies perfection of life, freedom, and beauty. All this is everlastingly valid, even for us today. These are the matters of which we intend to speak in this work. The ensuing reflections, they are purposely called by this name to distinguish them from scholarly treatises, have grown out of the spoken word, and the reception given these talks has shown that our age, in spite of all its skepticism, longs for an interpretation of everyday life based upon the eternal. This interpretation shall be carried out in a very unsystematic way. The first chapter deals with the determining points of view. Our interpretation does not pretend to be exhaustive. Rather, it lays hold upon ordinary reality as it came to our attention and seeks therein the starting points of moral self-realization. At all points, it appeals to the personal experience of the reader and strives from there to progress to a unity of ethical consciousness. Moral teaching has become too negative. These reflections seek to do justice to the living majesty, nobility, and beauty of the good. We tend too much to view the ethical norm as external to rebellious man. Here we shall regard the good as that whose realization makes man truly human. The young Glaucon was seized by a reverent transport at the words of his master. This book would attain its purpose if the reader felt that the knowledge of the good is a cause of joy. In 1930, a collection of Letters on Self-Culture, which had been composed during the preceding years, was made and published in book form. These letters were addressed to young people and in many ways presupposed the atmosphere of the youth movement. The present reflections are addressed to the more mature and presuppose a knowledge of the bitter years which we have experienced since that time. A historical abyss separates these two attempts at a doctrine of life, and yet they belong together, as in the same man, youth and maturity belong together.